Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Action fanatics, welcome to another edition of the Bulletproof Podcast. I'm your host, Chris the Brain. Joining me, my co-host, he's back again, Chad Cruz.
I'm back again for like the 100-something time.
Yep, you are back, and you know who else is back? Our good friend, a little under the weather, but he's gonna soldier on through this one. It's Ryan Campbell.
That's right, playing hurt. I watched this 14-hour-long movie today just for this. Let's do this thing.
This is your Michael Jordan moment.
That's right. It's my flu game or bad pizza game or Hanover game, whatever conspiracy theory you ascribe to about that game.
Well, before we get into the big epic movie we'll be talking about, I did want to plug a few things. I was recently the guest on the Indies with Adam Ryan. Actually, the first guest. It was episode one, which is a smart move by Adam.
Bane.
Yeah. I hope you're not the last guest.
Well, no, I was going to say it was a smart move because there's nowhere to go but up from there. So
I would argue much like the Mega Bowl, you really can't book anymore because
The Mega Bowl was something special. Sid Fabulous, if you're listening, hit us up because we'll bring you on here. You could talk about whatever you want to talk about. But yeah, on the Indies with Adam Ryan, you can find it on the Wrestle In Podcast Network. Got to talk about my time in the Heartland Wrestling Association. And of course, Adam is the man behind the history of the HWA Twitter, which is always a fun read when those come
out.
That's
where we all met. Well, how fun is that?
It is cool. Yeah. It's fun to go back and read those matches that I don't remember. And see how many times I lost.
Yeah,
so, I need a lot.
But yeah, jobber. And also, we talked about it for many, many weeks. Battle in the Berg 3. I'm happy to say it is now available on the Premier Streaming Network, along with the other two shows that I call for Spot Monkey Promotion. So just look up the Spot Monkey Promotion section on the Premier Streaming Network, and you can check all those out. And you can see if I'm better at calling wrestling action than I am at hosting a podcast.
He's back in the saddle, folks.
So, well, we'll see. We'll see if it continues. I think I might have one more on my contract. We'll see.
That's what they always say.
We'll see what happens. But, you know, since I'm talking about me, we're going to be talking about one of my favorite movies of all time here on this episode. We've been talking about doing this one for quite some time, Chad.
Yeah.
And here we are as this drops. It will be the 38th anniversary of Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins, released on October the 11th, 1985. This one, again, one of my all-time favorites. And it starts off with the great score by Craig Safin. This one directed, Chad, by Guy Hamilton, a man known for his work in the James Bond films. He did four of them all together, I believe.
Yeah, that's pretty wild to think that a guy who directed four James Bond films is now directing Remo Williams. But in a great way, I think. And it puts a lot of confidence, I think, as a viewer into thinking that, you know, this movie is going to be well made and that they had a lot of hope that this movie would become a franchise that, you know, that would become the American James Bond.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people would call Remo Williams kind of like the blue collar James Bond. And I think that's the vibe they were going for. And yeah, definitely kind of was hoping to sprinkle some of that James Bond magic on it.
It's definitely enough in the wheelhouse, but still different enough. So it's kind of, you know, there's enough that translates there that you would have a solid feeling going in that it would be a good film.
And like Bond, I mean, the character comes from books, the Destroyer series. So, you know, there was a lot of source material that they could have kept making movie after movie after movie from. Unfortunately, that did not happen. But let's get into the movie that did happen, because it starts off, we see Officer Sam Macon, played by Fred Ward, a mustachioed Fred Ward. Beautiful. He's on his break.
You got a few kind of Bronson looks in this film.
Yeah. He's on his break, having some coffee, listening to the Knicks game that he apparently had a little money on. When he notices this guy just being chased by two other guys, and that's not something you should normally see. So being a police officer, he decides to intervene. Follows these guys into this rundown warehouse, which this warehouse always reminds me of the warehouse they used for the Raw is War open.
I was
walking and intercut images of fire and warehouses.
Dogs barking behind a fence. Yeah.
I was thinking of a Hard Target.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that is true as well. I mean, I guess because it was up in the New York area that gave me that WWE vibe. But yeah, they go into this warehouse and poor Officer Sam figures out that these guys were in cahoots because they triple team them. But Sam's a tough bastard, Chad Cruz.
Yeah, he really is. And we kind of get an early look at some of his skills when it comes to beating the shit out of guys. And, you know, and actually taking a beating because, you know, James Bond, he'll throw down in his films. And in early movies, the fight scenes, the choreography is a little bit to be desired. But yeah.
It was a different time.
Sam does a pretty good job here. He's not taking no. I mean, he whoops some ass.
You could argue it's kind of a gritty style like they would eventually do with Daniel Craig's Bond. So you could almost say like Remo Williams is a precursor to the Daniel Craig Bond that was more blue collar, gritty, you know, getting his ass kicked quite a bit where he's bleeding a lot more than we typically see Bond.
You know what's funny about the whole Daniel Craig Bond is I don't know how long it's been since you guys watched Casino Royale, but you absolutely it's the grittier Bond and, you know, yeah. He's the origin and he's much more rough around the edges, but he also is doing fucking parkour in like 8 minutes into the movie. And it's like absolutely ridiculous. Like
it was a different time. Every movie had that parkour.
I know, but it's so funny. Cause you know, I hadn't seen the film in a long time and I love the movie. The action sequences are fantastic. And I've watched it recently and was like, oh shit, I forgot how great these action sequences were. But he's also, yeah, he's fighting a guy and smashing his head off a urinal. And then 25 seconds later, he's leaping from construction equipment and doing some wild shit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing with the Bond movies is they've spanned so many decades that they're often a reflection of what's going on at the time and what's hot, yes, and what's not, and so forth. So, again, if only Remo could have went that distance.
Spoiler alert.
I think everybody knows that was a one and done.
Like I hear a rumor about somebody.
Oh yeah, there's been talk about, you know, a reboot. I mean, to me, it would be the perfect like a series on one of these.
Yeah,
you know, obviously, if MGM is still the rights holder, well, Amazon make you a Remo series and be perfect.
Well, you got your Jack Reacher and your Jack Ryan have both done really well, so
yeah,
I'd say it's possible.
They're ending, aren't they?
I know
Jack Ryan just had its final season.
Multiple seasons. Yeah, Reacher has not.
Reacher's got his second season coming up, and that dude is looking more yoked than before. So I think by season 7 he'll just be like a freaking semi truck. Like he's gonna be massive.
I'm glad you mentioned a truck because our boy Sam goes to his car to call it in and a big ass truck comes up behind his car and forces him into the beautiful East River, which just being in that water could have killed you.
Yes.
But being in the water trapped in your cop car is pretty much a watery grave. That's his casket. That's where he's going to die. But then there's like some divers there. And were they supposed to be there? Was this a plan? What's going on? Next thing you know, we cut to what appears to be Sam Macon's funeral. And watching from afar is Mac, and that's the same guy that was in the truck.
Something's fishy here.
Was that Kramer swimming in the East River?
It could have been. It could have been. So then next, but we see that no, Sam did not die. So obviously those divers got him out. Sam wakes up in the hospital, sees a razor blade in his face. The nurse is there shaving him.
That's a great transition shot, by the way. Yeah. Where they like the focus when he sees the blade and then sees the nurse. I thought that was really cool.
And then he sees his reflection, does not recognize, he's, you know, obviously doesn't have the mustache. I think his nose is different. It's not as jarring as they make it seem.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a missed opportunity, I feel like. Cause you know, when we originally meet him, it still looks like him.
Yeah. It should have they should have just got like a totally different person. And you would almost think too, though, with the makeup they do for Chun, yeah, that they could have done something more.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about that.
At least just with his nose, so when he wakes up and he's normal, Fred Ward.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that. They should have went more extreme, I guess, with the Fred Ward makeup, so Sam looked like a completely different person. And not
should have made him more handsome.
Well, and that's part of why they say it happened, because Mac shows up. He's got a nice fruit basket, and when... You know, Sam questions like, "What did you do to my face?" And they say, "Well, we had some work done because you were ugly."
Hmm.
Mac, he don't play. And then we find out that Sam has been recruited by an organization that does not exist. And as of now, Sam Macon is dead. He's got this new face. They even gave him new fingerprints, and they gave him a new name. And a lot of thought was put into it, says Mac.
It was. They really workshopped it multiple times.
As he looks at the bottom of this bedpan and comes up with the name Remo Williams. Because it was from the Williams Manufacturing out of Remo, Arkansas.
That sounds like a bunch of pro wrestlers. Like, you're wearing blue.
David, looks around the room.
Yeah. Lamp. Blue lamp.
Right. That. Yeah.
I think I saw him on Dynamite tonight. I was kidding. Yeah. I didn't watch Dynamite.
Lucha.
So we've got the birth of Remo Williams here. We find out he's a decorated cop, an ex-Marine. He's also got no family, no commitment. So this is the perfect type of guy you could recruit for this organization that does not exist, that is here to take care of where the justice system is failing us. Because we've got corrupt cops, we've got judges for sale. Things aren't working the way they're supposed to, Chad Cruz.
No, it sounds pretty realistic to me.
So then Mac, after giving him that little rah-rah speech, excuses himself. Remo gets out of bed, gets dressed. He's getting the hell out of here. This is a bunch of bull. He heads outside, decides, oh, here's a nice form of transportation, an ambulance. What else would be outside? Chad Cruz, have you ever had your ambulance stolen like Reginald Vell Johnson did?
I have not, but it does happen from time to time. You would be surprised how often it happens. And, you know, we leave them running outside places mm-hmm. constantly, and I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often.
We also had Carl Winslow breaking his tight casting of always playing a cop to play a paramedic.
Yeah, it's a shame. Maybe it's a part-time job, you know?
He's still a man in uniform.
It's a rare condition this day and age.
What it tells me is that he actually scored higher on the test, so now he's a paramedic instead of being a cop.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, zing.
Shots got him. Fired.
Got him.
So Remo thinks, okay, I got this ambulance, I'm home free, but guess who's waiting in the back of the ambulance? Mac. He was one step ahead of Remo. Puts a gun to Remo's head and starts telling him where to drive. They arrive at the National Bank, obviously after hours. And that is where Remo's going to meet his new boss, Harold W. Smith, played by the one and only Wilfred Brimley.
Wilfred Brimley, who never stands in this entire film. And ironically, it's pretty hilarious. If you look up IMDb and you're looking at the screenshots, like the headshots, and he's sitting in the headshot on IMDb.
Classic.
Literally the man in the chair.
You got to respect that.
There is the one promo picture where he is standing. It's him, Remo, and Mac.
I mean, they had to shoot all his scenes in one day, right?
Most likely. I mean, he was a busy man back then.
He was.
He had Quaker Oats to sell, for cripe's sake.
Hell yeah.
So he kind of, Remo kind of gets his bit of a little bit more of this orientation of this new organization. They're only accountable to one man, and that's the president of the United States. When Remo tries to leave, the door is locked. And Smith has what is easily the most amazing computer ever. Certainly amazing for 1985. It would really actually be amazing for today, Ryan Campbell.
It is. It's the Exposition Tron 3000. That just whatever he needs, he's got full, I won't say HD video at the quality, but very good quality, well cinematography, well shot footage of in every exclusive meeting room, every military warehouse.
Yeah, with he has, like camera exchanges,
like thematic over narration to all the clips.
Yeah, that the narration is something special.
Great production value on that computer.
Yeah, like it can switch camera angles and shots. Like there's a truck that's controlling all these shots.
I like how all the on-screen graphics too for it were not consistent. Like this time you'd get like a blue border, and then it would be like red with like flashing yellow words, and it was just like never the same scene to scene.
So this computer will tell Smith whatever he needs to know. And basically they got Remo in because he's going to help remove some of this filth. And Remo's like, well, you know, what if I say no? Well, then you're dead because we've already got your grave for you. We'll just put you in. So what do you want to do? Well, it's kind of an easy choice at that point.
That's what we call being stuck between a rock and a hard place, I would say.
Indeed. Mac then takes Remo to what he believes is his first job. He goes into this, I think it's like the basement, enters through the basement to go, which he thinks he's got to go upstairs, but finds the mysterious Chun. And Chad Cruz, Chun, played by the one and only Joel Grey.
Yeah,
one and only. Character actor.
Who, when this movie was rented by my father back mm-hmm. in 1986,
mm-hmm.
and we were watching it.
You were 27 years old.
I was not. I had to hear multiple times from my father that Joel Grey is from Cleveland.
Oh, how about that?
Your father does love, like every time I'm there, he tells me about everything that's like national known.
Yeah.
In Cleveland.
Is there
did you go to the Christmas house?
Yeah, the Christmas story house is up here. Yeah, he loves it.
Is there a big Korean population up there in Cleveland?
No, no, there isn't. But I don't think Joel Grey was actually Korean, Chad Cruz.
What?
I think that was a bit of Hollywood magic that you could not get away with in today's age. But back in 1985, if you wanted a Korean, you could just get a guy, I believe Jewish guy, from Cleveland.
Yeah.
Named Joel Grey.
And it's the greatest kung fu, or not even kung fu, but like martial arts master in the universe. He also has some views that would not jive today, I'll say.
It's so bizarre that, you know, that, I feel like that works. You know, you would see that in the like a 50s movie, right?
Right.
You can use David Carradine, but
that was in the 80s.
I know, but in the 80s, you know, they were screwing Bruce Lee back then. Now it's the 80s, mid 80s, and they're still using this kind of a loophole.
Well, yeah, and then for the series that they attempted to do, Roddy McDowell was cast as Chun.
Classic.
So also,
that's the Roddy McDowell right there.
Yeah, pour one out for him. It is scary season, and Peter Vincent is one of my all-time favorite characters. So yeah, Remo meets Chun and experiences the art of Sinanju firsthand. Now, you know, we see Chun, he's dodging bullets. He disarms Remo with ease, and he just basically lets Remo beat himself. Remo never touches Chun.
Yeah, it's pretty sad to watch, really.
You do have some great audio effects for the like whooshing sound whenever he dodges bullets.
Yeah.
And then he has some excellent kind of nerve manipulation. It's pretty cool too. He causes nerve damage.
He does. And Mac is outside in the car. He can hear all this commotion, and he's getting a real kick out of it. Moments later though, he does come in and he needs the assessment of the great Chun, who hits the line that Remo moves like a baboon with two clubbed feet, but he can see a glimmer of hope somewhere inside him that he could probably do something with this guy.
Really? I would surprised if he can see any hope in this guy whatsoever.
That's why you are not the master.
That's true. That's true. I just didn't see it.
You did not see it. So we go back to Smith and his supercomputer. He's researching weapons manufacturer George S. Grove, and more specifically, this satellite, kind of part of the Star Wars program, and not the Star Wars that Ryan Campbell's obsessed with.
That's right.
But the Star Wars that Ronald Reagan was obsessed with in the 1980s.
Going for that nerd vote back in the 80s.
You know, the HARP is what it's called. And I believe it's like high altitude, whatever, something. Whatever. It's to stop nuclear missiles is basically what the gimmick is. We're in the Cold War still. But there's something fishy about this HARP satellite. And, well, that's going to be kind of, that's kind of like, okay, this is our bad guy for the, for the movie.
It's very back, GI, very, very much GI Joe.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, Destro was the frickin' weapons guy, but this Grove is a little bit more like legit. Like he's selling to the government.
Yeah.
But he might be selling a bunch of crap and just making a bunch of money off of it. I think that's
right people.
And yeah, he's playing the system. So next time we see Remo, he's being dropped off at Chun's Loft, which is where the training will take place. And this is where we find out a little something interesting about this whole scenario. They don't use guns, Chad Cruz.
Yeah, why would they?
The mind and the body become the weapon.
Well, that makes for a less exciting movie, I'll say that much.
Can you still some gunshots?
I think it makes it more interesting.
Clumsy weapon. They prefer weapons of a more civilized age.
Ooh. So,
bring back the Star Wars.
Star Wars reference.
Okay. Chun and Remo's second meeting goes about as well as the first. This time, Chun hits my favorite line that he's a pregnant yak. And here's where the nerve holds come in that Ryan mentioned, where he could paralyze and unparalyze Remo with ease, just twisting an arm, hitting a pressure point. He's got it all.
The thing I like about that whole part is it's always like he'll like lock up your arm, but then to release it, he'll like pull your ear, which is just like
exactly. Yeah, he knows all the gimmicks. And all of this is because Remo's basically a smartass the minute he walks in the room, Chad.
Yeah, he is. He deserves most of it.
He's a New York cop. That's what he's supposed to do.
We learn that Sinanju is a village in Korea, and that's where Chun's family, where he hails from, and that's where all the fighting arts were born. So kung fu, karate, ninjutsu, everything.
Drunken monk, all of them.
Started right there.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm going to do.
Yep. Go ahead. Finish.
Yeah, go on.
Here for the Shaolin Temple Blues. Yeah. Sinanju. Sinanju Temple Blues.
Excellent. Next thing you know, we're after the breathing exercises. We go up to the roof, and this is immediately where I would have been like, "You can put me in the grave," because Remo's like running on the ledge of this building, and I'm terrified as I watch it.
Not a big heights guy, huh?
No, not at all.
The question is, do you think your Remo, which if there was ever a episode for him to be barking and get in on the show, it's this one.
Yeah, we'll see if he comes in.
Would he run along the ledge of a building?
He was running along the ledge of the garden wall a couple weeks ago because he believed there was something on the other side of the fence. And I do believe there was something on the other side of the fence as well. And unfortunately, I believed it was a skunk.
Oh, no.
But fortunately, we didn't have an incident because it was late. And then when I went to go, I'm like, okay, we need to get inside. I looked down my driveway. At that point, the skunk must have made his way to the front of the yard. And I saw him. I'm like, well, we're just going to stay back here until I don't see that skunk anymore.
Smart move. I feel like Remo could dodge a bullet.
He might be able to.
We're not going to try it out.
No.
I've peed on our asses. But I feel like he could.
Yeah, he's much more athletic than I am. That's for sure. That's not saying much either. So yeah, you know, Remo has a fear of heights as well. And that's going to be kind of a ongoing, challenge for him until, we get to a big, big iconic scene, but we'll get there. But let's go back to the man in the chair, literally Smith, just sitting in the chair, working on his diabetes, doing more Grove research. And suddenly he gets an alert that a circuit that he has, the Grove circuit, has been breached, or somebody's trying to get into the Grove circuit, and it's Major Fleming. Kate Mulgrew, she's trying to get info on the harp, and at the same time, she's being sexually harassed by a coworker. Another thing that really would not fly in today's world.
That's kind of a theme for this film. I feel like there's like that happens multiple times. There, you know, James Bond. Yeah, okay, he was harassing.
It's presented
everybody
as being a negative. It's not like
that's right. True. That's true.
We all know those guys are assholes for doing that. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah. They're not glorifying it. That's for sure.
Right.
Yeah. It's not like Mad Men. We've moved on from there. So Fleming then says, "All right, I'm going to go to the general," and he's in there fiddle faddling around with a calculator, and he just kind of gives her, okay, Major, you know, you can tell he doesn't have as much respect for her because she is a female, but to her credit, she kind of gives him a zinger on the way out. Mm-hmm. And he just sitting there with his broken calculator like a jackass. But we kind of find out this guy is kind of a jackass. He's kind of a puppet. He's a puppet. So let's go back to Chun's. Chun gives Remo a Korean fingerboard that he will use to strengthen his fingers and his nails. So eventually, again, the body becomes a weapon, and Chun pokes a freaking hole right through that wooden Korean board.
I think, with
ease.
Go ahead.
I think Deshaun Watson's had a few Korean fingerboards. Cleveland Browns quarterback, Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
He's into that kind of stuff.
Got him in some trouble.
A few conversations about it.
Him and Robert Kraft are,
Yeah, they probably shared a room or two, you know, in a couple's massage room. Just a
buddy deal going on, a buddy pack.
Just lighting some candles, listening to that soft Inya music, and getting the old meat pounded.
Meat pounded. Well, while you're making fun of those gentlemen, Remo's making fun of Chun for wearing glasses. So their contentious relationship continues. Chun, he calls professional assassination the highest form of public service. And he basically lists all the people that the assassins have taken out over the centuries, really. Chad Cruz, you as a history buff, mm-hmm. you had to be excited to know that Napoleon was killed with Sinanju.
What's funny is he didn't actually list anyone who was assassinated. Like, he could have just listed and been like Abe Lincoln, and you know, he could have just said people
who died, but they were actually assassinated. That's the point of Sinanju.
All these people
you don't realize that they
sleep was Sinanju.
You don't realize that they've been assassinated. That's perfect. That's the perfect assassination, where they're not looking for anything. Like, we got to find out who killed this. No, he died because of this. Nuh-uh.
Not like the butcher on the last podcast I was on.
The butcher?
That hacked up a mess of it.
Yeah.
The butcher. Mr. The Butcher.
Right. Top of the world, baby.
There it is.
Like, I was like, I couldn't remember. I was like,
8 people listen to that episode. And like one of them obviously wasn't Chad Cruz.
I like to bring valuable content to those 8 people.
Well, I'm trying to think back to when Ryan was on last, when I was on it, and it wasn't that.
Yeah, it was not that one.
No. We 2-man boosted that one.
That was a good one.
Which one? The 2-man booth or the last one that we were all 3 together?
The 2-man booth one.
Okay. Thank you. Well, the numbers don't reflect that, but you know, some that doesn't mean it wasn't a good show. It just means people probably didn't know what the hell Top of the World was. Check it out, folks.
I've never heard of it.
We didn't either, but that was the point. Like, we were all trying to learn something new. Is that wrong?
No, I think it's a great idea.
Well, we'll see what happens. Anyway, we also find out, other than Chun really being proud of Professional Assassination, he also loves soap operas and believes it's America's only contribution to the arts. He needs to check out pro wrestling, which I guess is technically also a soap opera. We see Remo do an obstacle course that's been set up, and he does it, and he's very proud of himself. But, you know, Chun's a ball buster of a coach, which you kind of need to be, I suppose, at times.
Yeah, it'll be hard on these guys.
That training's going to come in handy, I have a feeling.
No way. Never.
So Chun is there. Chun's there. Okay, well, now you got to come back down. And he turns the lights off. He had to do it in the dark. Chun, you son of a bitch.
Hilarious consequences.
You bastard. So yeah, a little bit of humor. This movie's kind of all over the place sometimes.
Yeah.
And maybe that's one of the reasons it didn't catch on. I don't know.
I think that's part of the reason I joked earlier about the movie being 14 hours long. And I remember the first time I watched it years ago, it felt long. And I was watching it again today and I was like, this is a long ass movie.
It is long ass
movie. And I think part of it is because this section, you're used to other films, it being much shorter. I mean, they spend a lot of time with these two, you know, kind of hammering the same thing over and over again. And I know I get that it establishes the relationship and that pays off later in the film, but I think it does, you know, feel like this movie is more, it's like five acts. It just keeps, there's just another, this isn't the finale. Oh, we're now there's another part. So, and a lot of it feels kind of in this section, but there's some good scenes here. It's just, I think it helps to make it feel like it's longer than it is even.
I think for me, the biggest problem with the, not so much the length of it, but how much time, like you said, how much time it spends building the chemistry between the two. And, I feel like you don't get enough bad guy shit.
Yeah. That's definitely been the major complaint I've seen over the years was the bad, like Grove is obviously this greedy guy, but it's like, is he super, super bad though? I mean, he's a greedy businessman, but Remo would have, that'd be a full-time freaking job if he was going after greedy businessmen.
Right.
But yeah. And again, and I believe I mentioned this in my original review that I did many years ago after rediscovering the movie as a kid, this movie, I was in and out of it. It didn't help that my dad kept mentioning Joel Grey was from Cleveland, but it just kind of drags at places. And as a kid, I was like, you know, let's move it along.
Right.
I think that's how I was, I think, with Delta Force, which is another movie that obviously has like the two, it's a long movie, especially for canon, you know, like the cool G.I. Joe parts I loved, but all the airplane stuff, I was like, come on. Yeah. Where's Chuck Norris to kick some ass? And that's kind of how I was with this one too. Now, as an older, wiser human being, I could appreciate Remo and the Delta Force in their entirety and not just want action, 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 action. So, you know, that comes with age. So we are going to the Grove Infantry Rifle, the AR-60. They're testing these out. A soldier is freaking killed by it. This shoddy manufacturing. Blows up right in his face. Our girl Major Fleming is on hand, and she picks, this is just adding to her suspicions of this freaking Grove fellow. And then Grove gets a call from Watson as he's leaving here's where that supercomputer comes in handy in Canada, because they're like there and like it's live, like it's happening. He's good. Real good is the narration on that one. But yeah, Grove gets a call in his limousine from General Watson. This is where we really get a good look at his right-hand man, Jim Wilson, played by Michael Pataki, of course, who's also the right-hand man of one of our favorites, Chad Cruz, Ivan Drago.
Yes. And that's, I mean, when you see his face and you realize this movie was made in the mid-80s, I just think that he's like a Soviet plant.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah. Oh, he's a Soviet.
That poor guy. He's just constantly the fixer. That's yep. his role, the fixer.
So, yeah, basically, like, hey, you know, they had to write up because this guy died. So, yeah, there's paperwork on this. Well, you lose that report. I'm George S. Grove, son of a bitch. So what's Watson? Watson, again, he's a puppet. Remo and Chun now are visiting Coney Island, which I understand is sinking as we speak. And more specifically, the Wonder Wheel. And again, this is another test of to get Remo over his fear of heights. And before they go back home, though, Chun does play the bottle game with Uncle Lewis presiding over it and wins a giant Pink Panther.
That was a cute moment. We definitely missed a moment there when they got off the Wonder Wheel to just pan by like the bewildered attendant who's running the ride. Like, what the heck is wrong with these people? Because, I mean, they just let him do that. They let him just climb up on right. the Wonder Wheel.
It wasn't a busy day at Coney Island either. So I don't know. Maybe that's why.
Kind of that, you know, the parkour shit that James Bond was doing, you know.
There you go.
These guys were doing that crazy Russian webcam video, whatever they do. Video themselves running off buildings and shit.
We got a little of that coming up with, you know how many construction workers love to do parkour. We're gonna find out about that in a few minutes.
big time with them.
So yeah, Remo, we get more of the back and forth with Remo. He's hiding junk food around the loft. But then we get to this subcommittee meeting that, again, of course, our boy Smith has video of with multiple camera angles.
Not even like in the ceiling, like over someone's shoulder.
Yeah, like in the room. Like this was on, yeah, some kind of sophisticated C-SPAN. And Fleming is there. Grove is there. Buttonhead's over. Like, hey, what's going on with this harp thing? Ugh. Blah, blah, blah. Grove is offended that anyone is even asking anything about it because he's George S. Grove. Smith is impressed with her, you know, like, look, she's got a good head on her. She realizes there's some bullshit going on, but she's also could be getting herself in danger because we've seen what happens when people go against George Grove, like the IRS and FBI. They just disappear. Their children disappear. So, you know, when she's in town, Mac, go give her some stuff so she's not digging around, whatever. I don't really know how that helped her or not, but whatever.
Wasn't Fleming the name of the James Bond creator?
Ian Fleming, yeah. Mm. Very good.
All out, that's true.
I just realized that as I'm looking at your notes.
You're a genius, Chad Cruz. This is why we're so glad you're on the show.
Yes.
Now, Grove is like, I want to keep that bitch on a real short leash. And there's only one man who can keep bitches on real short leashes. And that man is a man made of and named Stone. The Bitch Leasher. Played by the one and only Patrick Kilpatrick, who, of course, is famous for his turn as the Sandman in Death Warrant. That's what I always think of Patrick. And we talked about him, of course, in the fantastic episode we did about Showdown.
Yeah, he plays a great bad guy. I mean, he's so unlikable.
Yeah,
I guess that's one word to use. But yeah, he's like a menacing looking dude. His face he's very scary. Punchable. Yeah, he looks scary.
He's scary. He is. You get to see Remo running on the beach, and he runs so fast now he's hovering over the beach. Very nice. Mac then shows up. Hey, looks like he's doing well. Look at him. He's freaking floating in air. When's he going to be ready? 15 years or so. Maybe 14 and a half. Well, we don't have that much time. Mac's going to need to borrow him for something. Then we get some, Remo and Chun are starting to get personal. Remo's asking him some questions like, hey, you ever have any sex? Are you like a, are you celibate? What's going on?
I think he started with like, do you have a family? Have you ever been married?
Right. Yeah.
It wasn't like you ever, you know, get your weenie wet, you know?
Right. Right. He builds up to it, but I'm getting to the heart of the matter.
He's having a hard time.
Oof.
I mean, just because the movie's 2 hours long doesn't mean this podcast has to be.
Yeah. Let's hope.
So yeah. But Chun knows how to make the women do what they need to do. He's found all the spots he needs to find on them. And 22. He has many steps to get a woman to ecstasy, but he has rarely had to go past like step 6 or 7, I believe he said. Hmm. So Chun knows how to please a woman. And I mean, he's a handsome man.
Yeah,
he got that Cleveland Korean shine to him.
Joel Grey, he's from Cleveland. In case anyone, if you joined us in progress, and I don't even know how that's possible. I guess you just like skip your thing ahead. Joel Gray's from Cleveland, and he played Chun.
I've heard people from Cleveland know how to make women come.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. All right. Stone, meanwhile, is outside this government building where Major Fleming is headed. I don't know how he knew she was going to be there, but maybe, you know, maybe Smith isn't the only one with a frickin' supercomputer. Did you ever think of that? I just did. So she goes in there. She goes upstairs. She meets with Mac, who's posing as a colonel, not named Mac. And he's like, here's some documents for you. Enjoy. And then that's basically, it's not like they have a long discussion. She gets her shit. She goes to the elevator. Who's right behind her? Our boy Remo, who compliments her buttons. Chad Cruz. What did you think about her buttons?
They were fine. I wouldn't say they were mediocre, but they were okay. I wouldn't go so far as to compliment a woman on her buttons. Now, she had a nice ass.
There you go.
I don't know how to work. Not buttons, but butt is what you're saying.
She had a nice butt on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, obviously, this elevator ride doesn't last forever. She's back outside. She tries to hail a cab. Her hands are full. Remo, being the gentleman he is, who only complimented her buttons, not her ass, offers to help. But I think he's coming on a bit too strong for her. She's kind of like, what is all this? I'm going to walk to my destination. And that's when Stone is beeping his horn because he wants to trail her, but our boy Remo's in the way. And we notice an interesting physical feature on our man Stone. He has a diamond in his tooth, Chad Cruz.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I don't know why you would do that, but
it's very Bondish.
It is very Bondish, but I'm going to say when it comes into play later, it's probably my favorite scene in the whole film.
It's a good scene. A police officer sees Remo with his goozling Stone like he's CM Punk and Stone is Jungle Boy. Things don't escalate. Stone does get some photos, though, we find of Fleming, Mac, and Remo. And these are on the desk of our man, George S. Grove. He needs to know who these people are. And the best way to do that is give them a body and see who claims it.
Yeah.
And they're going to get the body of Remo Williams because Stone sets up Remo as he and Chun visit the Statue of Liberty. And this is really one of those once-in-a-lifetime things, well, at least until CGI was invented, a once-in-a-lifetime type situation where the Statue of Liberty had the biggest scaffolding ever built known to man at the time to prepare it for its 100th anniversary. So it was just completely surrounded
by scaffolding,
and they were able to film there, at least some of it. They couldn't touch the actual statue. That was like a replica that was built in Mexico where he was actually on the statue. But it's really done well. It's very seamless. It makes it feel like he was on the actual freaking Statue of Liberty.
Oh, yeah. It actually...
I found myself a few times trying to figure out where... Because I didn't know that for sure, but obviously they're not going to let him slide down the arm of the Statue of Liberty. So I'm trying to see the seams, and yeah, it was really well done. There was a few parts where, like, it looked like they were about the midway point, and then all of a sudden it would cut and they're like up by the head. So like some of the positioning kind of didn't match the cuts, but trying to figure out where the replica was and where there was no real like terrible looking green screen or anything like that, or really like early green screen. It looked really bad, or matte work or something like that. It was really well done, the entire part. I wonder if they wrote that in there, or like if it just was perfect timing where they're like writing the script and this is going on. They're like, how cool would it be if we could get a day of shooting and then work it into the script or whatever.
Right. I don't know if I'm just spoiled by like modern day film, but I just kind of assume it's not the real Statue of Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
So when I did read about later or, you know, after I'd seen the film or whatever, it didn't have it wasn't as cool when I watched it because I didn't know. I just assumed it was a fake one. So, I mean, I knew it when I rewatched it the other day, but I'm like 40 now and not like 8 when I saw it the first time.
That is true.
Again, yeah, this is definitely a movie that's better enjoyed the older you are, I believe. The construction workers, 3 of them,
there's some characters, man.
Yeah, they're glad to take money to kill somebody that they have no idea who the hell it is.
Wasn't it like $30?
Yeah, it wasn't a ton of money.
He counted to 30.
Yeah,
maybe let's say he was like counting hundreds or something. Because yeah,
30, 100.
Killed a man. Well, he's like,
well, 3,000, 1,000 apiece to kill Remo Williams.
Huh? Yeah. What would you do for $1,000, Ryan?
I don't know. I know what I would do for a Klondike bar.
Hey. Are they sponsor this episode?
If they want to, hit us up.
Are you looking for a cool treat this cool fall? Why not try Klondike?
They probably have like a pumpkin flavored one.
That's pumpkin spice crazy. Flavored?
Yeah, probably. Why not? Everything else is.
Support the people that support us. Have a Klondike bar.
There you go. Great read, Ryan.
Thank you. Thank you.
You should submit to be one of those voice people.
You know what? I'd eat the shit out of a Klondike bar right now.
Needs work. Needs work.
Pretty good job then.
Needs work, Chad. So yeah, they try to kill Remo. They think that, you know, they're hitting the boards and screwing with them, and they think they accomplished their goal. And not only do they think they accomplished their goal, so does Stone, who's also watching from down below. And he's got 2 boys with him. Zach, played by the one and only John Polito, who I think I always will remember from The Crow. And another one, Chad Cruz. And we've talked about so many movies where this man pops up.
Mm-hmm.
It's Red. It's the one and the only, the late, the great Judo Gene LaBelle.
Yeah, he doesn't last long, but man, is he memorable. He goes down in a very heavy way.
Indeed, because, yeah, once they now realize that Remo did not die, he takes out the construction guys, makes it to the ground, and it's Red who goes right after him. And Remo, again, we saw his amazing running skills in the sand. He can run over wet concrete, barely putting an indentation in it. Red, however, sinks. This had to be some deep ass concrete they were pouring.
That was deep. There should at least be some like rebar in there somewhere.
You would think so.
A little air bubble was the best part.
Yeah.
And the other part where the guys just are like so dumbfounded, they just let them drown in it.
Nobody attempts.
But again, these construction workers are cold hearted bastards because you give them $3,000, they'll kill you.
Well, you think about like nowadays, they wouldn't be helping and they'd just be filming it.
Yeah. True.
So are we better or worse, Brian?
And then Smith and the rest of us could watch it on Instagram.
Yeah.
With or a Klondike bar.
On TikTok with, yeah, sponsored by Klondike.
Speaking of Instagram and all those other social media.
Yeah.
Apps. Go ahead and plug us, Brian.
Oh, you know.
I don't know what they are.
Well, it's at Bulletproof Action on Instagram and Facebook and Chad's favorite Threads.
Threads, that's the one.
And
X.
At Bulletproof Pod on X.
Formerly, give it to you.
Formerly known as Twitter. Yeah, X is going to give it to you. You can get all the latest updates about Bulletproof Action there. So yeah, Zach then tries to get the jump on Remo, who's distracted by Stone in the who's now on his boat to get away, but Chune steps in, takes care of Zach. So thanks for coming as well, John Polito. You raspy voice motherfucker. So now Remo's pissed because these guys tried to kill him. He didn't get a hold of that damn stone. Goes to Smith to see it. And he's like, I was on the Statue of Liberty. What the hell were you doing on the Statue of Liberty? You're supposed to know everything, Smith. Anyway, they figure out, okay, this Grove is on to the fact that somebody is on to him. So now he's going to come try to find us. And we find out that they have a real, like, they're not going to get discovered, Chad. If one thing's going to happen, one thing's not going to happen in this movie, no one's going to figure out that this organization exists because they have a very extreme plan.
Quite the contingency plan.
Yeah, they're ready, willing, and able to kill themselves at the drop of a hat.
Right, Smith has a pill that he could take that will induce a heart attack. Max ready to just go to a haberdashery and shoot himself. I don't know why he's got to go to the haberdashery, but yeah, he does.
He might need some therapy. His was a little.
And I think I was accused of saying haberdashery recently when I did not, but I just said it now on this podcast.
You sure did.
He's
listening.
Yeah, I hope he is. And now Remo, however, not everybody was ready, willing, and able to take themselves out, Chad. And they probably, again, the contingency plan, they were like, this guy's too new. He's not going to get it. Chune was ready. Chune would be the one to take out Remo.
Yeah, yeah, he's got the skills too.
But again, whoa, boys, we're not there yet. Let's not worry about that. We need to get some hard evidence, though, on this Grove. And that's where Mac and Remo take a little trip. And we do get the little scene before Remo goes off of Mac where Chune does admit he would kill Remo if the Emperor Smith so ordered it. It's a little emotional there, Chad Cruz.
Yeah, I mean, these two have spent a lot of time together. We've spent a lot of time with them. I'm kind of tired of them already. But
we just had the Pink Panther moment, too.
We did. And now Chune essentially says, I would kill you if they just mentioned it to me without even twisting his arm. So I guess you have to respect the fact that Chune is such a team player that he would do that. But
he said it's part of the contract. He honors that contract.
He is an honorable man. You know, I guess Remo's just got to live with it or die eventually if he has to.
Indeed. We find out that Mac has a prosthetic arm when they try to get in and there's an electrified fence and Mac and it doesn't bother him because he has a fake arm and it's plastic.
Like they should have done that earlier. Like something should have happened.
Okay.
And you know, it would have been like mysterious, like, oh man, why didn't that work? Maybe like Chune like grabbed him or somebody did something to his arm and it didn't hurt him.
Well, that's what Remo was first. He's like, did Chune show you how to do that? Like, yeah. How did you just cut through an electrified fence without electrocuting yourself?
Or like someone shoots him with a trank dart in his arm and he just like pulls it out. No big deal. Yeah. I don't know. But because it essentially like revealed something that was never a question until that moment. You know what I mean?
This movie is just full of surprises, maybe.
They should have added 5 more minutes there to the film and had like 3 scenes of just his arm.
Yeah, or maybe how he lost his arm in the war.
Arm origin.
Yeah, his arm origin story is what I think we really needed in this film. Maybe if they revisit it at some point.
Yeah, why not?
We can get a better Mac. Or maybe they'll just make like a Mac series first, like a prequel series where Mac was like the main guy.
I think so.
And then it gets to the end where it's like, okay, Mac, you have a fake arm, you're getting old, we need a replacement, let's start looking. Oh, here's this cop with a mustache and a weird nose, let's kill him. Anyway, we get to Remo. He takes on some dogs, he takes on some rats,
friend of the animal kingdom,
and then eventually he does get to the harp But before he gets too close, Chad, the whole thing just explodes.
Oh, well, shit. There it goes.
That's quite a kill plan there. If anyone gets close to it, we just nuke the thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually pretty smart, really, if you don't want to get caught, with this kind of thing.
To be fair, it was probably a piece of shit anyway.
It was just window dressing, we find out.
Yeah.
But now, obviously, this facility is on high alert because the one thing they were probably supposed to protect more than anything has been discovered. There's alarms going off. There's security teams assembling. Chaos. Remo and Mac need to get the hell out of there. Remo does a little tightrope action. Doesn't think the dog is going to be able to follow him. Well, he was wrong. The dog could walk the fucking tightrope.
Never underestimate a dog.
No. Mac, however, at least got the evidence they needed. To get out, they decide to use a bulldozer to crash through the fence. And this is a sad scene because Mac is shot in the back. Remo goes to get him, but he's like, he's done for. Get this evidence to Smith. So Remo takes off like a thief in the night with the evidence. Mac is captured, put on life support, because why wouldn't they have a life support area in this secret, like, hidden room behind what looks like not a door?
Yeah, for interrogations, they can keep people alive as they torture them.
Yeah. But before they could call in the bitch leasher Stone, Mac just slices his life support. He's done. He didn't get to do it in the haberdashery, but he did it. He got to do it. He took himself out, Chad.
Yeah, I mean, another moment where you see how committed these guys were to their trade, to not being caught, to not being, you know, tortured to death, which just sounds pretty awful. So good for him.
Another reason we need
Max. Which arm did he use? Which arm did he use, by the way? Is this his prosthetic arm?
I think his right arm.
I think it had to be the arm, because that arm was in the dog's mouth.
Gotcha. Okay. I just couldn't.
That could be an error. We might need to rewatch it, all 2 hours of this.
So just watch all of it again.
Yeah, to really get what you are going for. So once Smith gets this information, he's figured the whole thing out. He's actually laughing at it, like, this son of a bitch, Grove. And Remo's like, you cold-hearted bastard. Our boy Mac just is dead now. You're going to just let Grove get away with it? But the wise Smith's like, you can stop him, son. You can stop him. And now is really
now where... I'll be watching the whole thing from my chair.
No. Exactly. And now is where business really picks up. We're now into the... what I guess is
hour technically four.
Would be the third act, but we've had as Brian said, there may be like five acts in this one. This is the final act. We get to Mount Promise. All the players are going to be there. We've got Grove. We got his man Wilson. We got his man Stone. We got General Watson, Major Fleming. And you know, Grove tries to make nice with Fleming, like, oh, you know, I'm so sorry, blah blah blah. I know you're just doing your job. But of course, being an asshole that he is. But what about these guys? What are you doing with these guys? And she doesn't know. And he shows her the pictures of Remo and Mac that Stone had taken. And she's just like, I'm offended. I hate you. I don't know who these people are. I've got work to do, you bastards. So she storms off. She heads outside. And who shows up but Remo? And I like that on his jacket, it actually said Williams.
Did it? I didn't notice that.
I was like, oh.
Secret agent, man.
Did they have that especially made for him? I mean, obviously, that's a very easy name. So she spots him, and she's like, you're setting my career back. They think I'm, you know, your accomplice. But she ends up talking herself into the fact that he is with Army Intelligence, and that he's a superior officer to her. So, and he just lets her fill in the blanks.
Yeah, I didn't like this scene. It made her seem stupid.
Yeah.
Well,
be the second most common complaint I've heard about this movie. Number one being the bad guys. Number two, that there's not a really great female character. I mean, she's the only female character in it. And yeah, she does.
It doesn't come start off that way. They make her come off as like very capable. And right. She, you know, gives it. And then like once she hooks up with Remo, she just becomes like
very. Basically a damsel in distress.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just missed opportunities. And I liked the character. I think she does a good job.
Yeah.
But yeah, she really feels like she's, she goes from like this, like hard ass major who like needs answers to just like, she's like batting her eyes at him.
It all starts with the buttons line.
At him? Him?
But you know, that could be something, you know, that could be in a deleted scene where maybe Chun did teach him some, female wooing tricks, yeah. Just maybe. with his eyes, perhaps.
Maybe he grabbed her by the hand and
things you don't even, yeah, hit erogenous zones and whatnot. Yeah.
Korean mm-hmm. women love buttons,
that's right? Yeah, mention something, little something. Well, yeah, we need a 3-hour cut of this. Jim Wilson rolls up in a Jeep. Oh, I understand you have some concerns about the AR-60. Mm-hmm. I'm here to... Oh, that's what I'm here for. Let's... We've got a test set up. Let's go check that out. And then she's, oh, you coming, soldier? And Remo hops in the back. And but it's all a trap.
Shit.
A devious trap. And who's there to watch it all unfold but that bitch Leisher himself? Stone sitting back just watching them die in this like pressurized room, gas or something is coming down from the ceiling. Fleming almost instantly passes out. Remo fights it. When Stone sees like there's not much fight left in him though, he's gonna go and get his licks in for what he did to his good friends Zach and Red.
And the construction workers.
And the construction workers. I hope we get a prequel where Stone, we learn more about Stone, Zach, and Red and how they were running buddies. And
road trip.
They were maybe they're in the war together.
Woodstock.
Yeah. I want that storyline too.
Continental style.
The series. I want it all.
Triple team that chick at the truck stop.
Oh, shit. You better believe they did.
They really missed an opportunity here with like the very first lesson that Remo learns is about breathing.
They
keep waiting for it to pay off in here. All they had to do was have him like sit quietly in the middle of the room and like control his breathing. And then that pissed off Stone so much that he goes into the room to finish the job. But like, there's a perfect opportunity there. And it is.
That would have been cool. I agree. I like that. I never thought about that.
Rebooking.
Rebook that shit.
Once again.
I mean, you could retroactively say that's why he was able to hold out so much longer than
true. Her. Yeah.
But yeah.
There was a way to, you know, make it work a little, be a little more obvious, but.
That is true. So Stone goes in there, his mask gets ripped off, and here's your scene, Chad. Here is the scene you love the most.
Take it away.
Go for it.
Yeah, Stone goes in with the mask on. Remo's kind of like playing possum, if you will, using his superior breathing control that he was taught by Chun. And Remo strikes back, beats the fuck out of him. I think he rips his mask off, and then doesn't Stone put it back on at some point?
Yeah. After he does the he gets the glass.
Yeah.
He goes back in at this point. Now, yeah, Stone's trying to regroup. He gets the mask back on, and then
Remo sends a fucking digit through his eyeball.
Yeah.
And then
thanks to the Korean fingerboard,
thanks to finger banging. And then he takes his face, rips the mask off, shoves his fucking chompers up to the glass and uses the diamond in his tooth to cut the glass. And another, you know, missed opportunity, throw that motherfucker through the glass. But instead, throws that dude back and then dives through the glass like a champion.
Yeah.
It's a cool scene. I mean, I love the diamond tooth gimmick. I think it's pretty cool. And it does pay off, which I'm glad that it was brought up earlier. You know, I feel like that paid off. They could have done that with the prosthetic arm. They could have done that with the breathing. There was multiple times they could have had payoffs. But but this one finally did, and it was
and the, my the finger scene. The fingerboard paid off too.
The finger bang, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Grove and Miller and Watson are just kind of hanging out, and
Smith's watching.
And
I wish I could have a beer with them.
He probably is
somewhere watching.
He's watching. They're just sitting there, and the one of the soldiers comes in and says, "Oh, bad news." And I want to say that that soldier dude is the same soldier, or same. He's the guy from Iron Eagle. When at the end of Iron Eagle, when Doug rescues his father, and they're like, "Oh no, here comes some more planes. We're fucked now." And it's their planes, and it's the guy who's like, "Ah, happy to see you again."
So I'm going to take your word for it, because if there's anybody who would know a similar actor from Remo and Iron Eagle, it's you, Brain.
So yeah, I mean, that guy's in both. He's in two of my all-time favorites, so I should probably know his name. I should have probably looked it up and given him his kudos, but I didn't do that. So, yeah, we get – he's like, oh, and then, yeah, that damn Jim – oh, what happened? You were there, you son of a bitch. You know. He was like, oh, they were hoping to find out that Major Fleming and Remo were dead. But no, you stupid sons of bitches. It was Stone. Your boy. The Your boy. Bitch leasher. So Remo and Fleming are now wandering in the wilderness around the base, moving away from the base, which is now on Alpha 1 alert.
Oh, shit.
National security is at risk here. So everyone's about to go after Remo, but you got to keep, you know, they can't play off that Major is a traitor.
The
so like
entire might of a few Jeeps is on the case.
So they're going there. They eventually find Chun, who was stomping around for 10 minutes, but Remo's too deaf to hear him. Chun, not into women's lib, Chad Cruz.
Not a big women guy. He's been kind of living by himself, practicing Sinanju for so long. And even though he's got all the abilities in the world to make a woman make her feel pleasure, he doesn't appear to want to do it. And even when faced with the opportunities, he chooses not to. And I feel like when Fleming shows up, earlier Fleming, when she had been a little bit more aggressive kind of acting, he might have liked her more, but now she's kind of in that phase where she's just kind of a pushover, and he just kind of like pie faces her and treats her like a dog.
Wow. Yeah, we get women are only good for staying at home and making babies, and we also in this film get a Koreans are the superior race.
yes, all these.
Yeah, and not just making babies, preferably man-child.
Preferably right. Man-child.
We don't need too many more women around.
We haven't fact-checked any of this, by the way. BPA staff has not fact checked any of this.
No, we don't do much of anything, actually. And he's just, you know, oh, I know why you're here, Chun. You're here to kill me. Oh no, I'm here just to make sure you don't bring shame to the House of Sinanju. Fleming obviously is totally confused, as she should be. I mean, this is a proper reaction, because what the hell has she gotten herself into? Like, why is this Korean man here? Why is he helping this army intelligence guy? It doesn't matter. Because now they're going to steal a truck, because obviously that'd get them to where they need to go faster than on foot. And it's going to go real fast, Chad, because this truck has no brakes.
Yeah, what a choice. Were there no other trucks available?
Well, that's the one that was parked on the side of the road because the guys were working on it.
Really good banter between that two. Damn, Dave, what'd you do? It rolls away.
Ryan Campbell, did you do the voice work on that?
That was good. That was so good.
Check out my Fiverr account for my voiceover work.
Nice.
There you go.
$1.
One American dollar.
More words. I'm yours.
So, yeah. So, at some point, they realize, all right, we're going to have to abandon ship or truck. In this case, and Fleming and Remo go out the driver's side door. Unfortunately, the passenger side door does not open, and Chun is in there, but survives. I mean, this thing goes down a hill and crash flips, and good old Chun, he survives without a scratch.
Is anyone surprised?
Probably I could have scored, like watching it the second time, just now, like today. I could have sworn I thought he died. No, I thought that maybe I'm tuned out the first time I watched it by this point, and I just remember him being like sitting there looking dead in a car.
You thought he was like
already like ghost white.
He became Obi-Wan after that and was just a spirit that channel. Yeah, no. So
he should have been like, if that had been Kia or Hyundai, it would not have crashed.
Well, I don't think was that even
would have started.
It does Korean cars.
They are, but I don't know how prevalent they were in 1985.
Come on, bro. Give me one here. Come on. Let me have
it. In today's world, it would have worked.
Well, they also stole it very easily, so Kias and Hyundais are stolen very easily.
Yeah, that's true.
It works in two ways.
If it wasn't a Tesla, you just would have caught fire and burned for 3 months.
Mm, come on, man. Don't say that. I own stock in Tesla.
The Kia boys.
Kia boys. You're
also a fireman. Isn't that kind of like insider trading? I don't know how that works.
I think only like 5 Teslas a year catch fire. It's just you hear about every one of them.
Yeah.
To the moon.
To the moon, baby.
All right. Well, yeah. We get a nice little moment, though, where Chun lets it slip. He calls Remo his son. And you could see that these two have formed a bond. And Remo's like, so when he goes out to, before he goes to do what he has to do, he calls Chun little father.
Mm.
There's the payoff for spending an hour and 15 minutes with these two. Yeah.
Very nice.
You know, what's weird is it felt like they were together forever, but it was only a couple of months, wasn't it?
Right. Yeah. It couldn't have been that long.
He learned a lot in a couple of months. I mean, Jedi trained for years.
Well,
unless you're Luke Skywalker.
And you get like a weekend at camp.
Yeah.
So Chun does not want to hear Major Fleming's yammering, so he does some kind of nerve gimmick, shuts her up. Meanwhile, Remo's in the woods dodging bombs.
Didn't he pretty much do the exact same thing that he told Remo would get a woman to climax, but he just does like the first.
And maybe that's what he did. Maybe she was jizzing herself and just kept herself quiet.
Whole thing, like he told him to do.
Yeah. So Remo's dodging bombs, dives in his thing, ends up hanging off this log, and
what a contraption.
This is a wonderful scene. And that's when they get word that, we got a human presence 50 feet in the air. What the? And that's where Watson and Grove, they're in the Jeep, and they spot them. Their soldier who was driving the Jeep would not. He's like, that guy's not going anywhere. I like this part because they get rid of him because he didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, fuck that guy. Shoot him.
He was it kind of reminded me of American Ninja. The same thing happens where the bad. Oh, we just talked about him in Revenge of the Ninja. Who did he play? What's his name? Was he the major?
The colonel or whatever. I don't know.
Major guy. He's bad. And they're like trying to chase after Joe or something at the end there. And he pushes him out of the thing so he can die on his own. And the innocent soldier doesn't. That's good. So Grove, the soldier won't do it. Grove's going to do it himself. And this is where we get the art of Sinanju. These deaths have to look like a perfect accident. And this is where Remo drops a log. Perfectly on a bunch of, this is kind of like Ewok-ish using these logs.
So timed it perfectly.
Times it perfectly, which these logs then go force the Jeep off the road. And it looks like we've killed our man Grove, his stupid guy Jim, and the incompetent General Watson, who was in on all this, so they all deserved it, apparently. Chun and Fleming are waiting for Remo by the lake. They hear the big explosion. Or it didn't explode yet, did it? No, it doesn't explode yet.
Yeah.
Well, he dodged the bullets and then
Grove, Grove survived the crash, and now we get this final showdown between Grove and Remo, and he's like, I used to want to know who you were, now I'm just gonna shoot you. But this is where Remo learned that he can now dodge the bullets, much like we saw Chun do at the beginning.
His last trick.
He does the disarmor thing as well.
Yeah.
And then that's when Grove's like, "Who are you?" And he walks away. I'm Remo Williams, and he's got the twig, and he's doing it real fast. So it catches fire, tosses it behind him, and the wreckage blows up. And there goes George Grove. And that somehow instantly is relayed to Smith in his chair.
Yeah, instantly.
It's like no one even got there yet to report on this, but he already knew it.
Satellites, man. SpaceX has been setting them up like crazy.
All right. Fire tower. Maybe there's a fire watch tower or something.
Certainly wasn't the HARP satellite. Remo makes it to the boat where Fleming is still there, but now Chun isn't there because he went looking for Remo. And when Remo or Chun shows back up, there's all kinds of soldiers around. They finally come there, and we get the big Chun runs across the water, which you have to do so very fast to make that happen. Fleming is just, would you believe we're the good guys? And they go off on their boat, and the soldiers just watch them go. And Chun needs to get back in time to see what happened on his story. So
yeah, makes a lot of sense.
Hit the awesome score and credits. And now your final thoughts, Chad Cruz.
Well, there are great things. There are good things. There are bad things. There are things I would certainly change. I enjoy the film. I think it is probably about 20 minutes too long. But I feel like the villain's kind of weak. But you know, it's funny because movies like this, right? You're like, this would work great as a series of films, or probably more of like a series,
right?
Like, you know, 8-episode series. It would be great because you could spend 2-3 episodes doing all this shit, and then he gets an opportunity to take down some bad guys over the course of the last remaining episodes. But but this one kind of fits in a lot of shit in one movie, and it all the payoff parts don't really land to me. I feel like the training is cool. I think Remo as a character is cool. There's like all these mixed up, there's like random mixtures of comedy and people dying and getting shot. And it's like, okay, well, it is the 80s. So that happened a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a fun movie. There are sequences that are really cool, like the Statue of Liberty. I love the diamond and the tooth thing. I don't know. It's a mixed bag to me. And I can see why it never really caught on with me when I was young. But it's cool, you know? It's one of those movies where, like, I bet the second film in the franchise would have been badass.
It would have been, yeah. Because they would have got that origin story out of the way.
Yeah.
And we could have just gone off and running with Remo and Chun. And yeah, built, then more of the movie could have, the second would have built up this bad guy.
Yeah.
And made it all the sweeter.
When
Remo beat him. Yeah.
We watched, when we did a podcast, go back in the archives and check this one out on, was it Blind Fury?
Yes.
And we didn't need an hour-long origin for him learning these skills. We saw it in like a 10
opening minute. Credits. Yeah.
Yeah. Not even 10 minutes, less than 10 minutes. And I thought it worked really well then. So yeah, if you had done that here, you would have lost a lot of that Chun Remo kind of chemistry.
Yeah. It's like you needed again, that's why this probably would have worked better as a series. Cause you could have had an episode or two where they were doing our whole episode was just devoted to that training. And then,
right.
Then they started going out in the field and doing little missions. And then that built up to this big mission at the end. Yeah. Ryan Campbell.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the same thoughts. I feel like there is some kind of tonal issues, like not entirely sure kind of what tone it's going for. Some points feel kind of family friendly. And then some points seem like it's trying to do a little bit more, but yeah, I mean, I think it's the execution of it, I think, is real well. The effects are done real well. The shots look well. They don't look hokey for the time period. I think Chun and Remo's chemistry is real good. I think we've all said it that I don't know if we needed so many scenes that essentially do the same thing, like one after another. But yeah, I agree with a lot of what you guys have said, but really good. And I think it would have, again, made it great for a series. This movie pretty much was kind of like a mini series, if you were to imagine. You could easily break it up into 5 or 6 episodes just in this movie. But yeah, agreed. Just a little, some tonal things. I don't know if it's affected or not, but by the time I watched it for the first time, Fred Ward to me was Joe Dirt's dad. So I don't know if that affected the, what was it like when it originally came out? Was he credible as like an action star?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, when I watched it as a kid, the problem was the length of it and there was a lot of down points. But I think, you know, it's, for me, it's got that 80s magic.
Yeah.
I'm going to overlook some of the, you know, we talked about them here and obviously I know they exist, but when I watch it, I kind of just overlook that and focus on the good stuff. I sure. love the music. I think it's great.
Yes.
And there's just so many, again, the Statue of Liberty, like you said, the Diamond Tooth, even some of those, you know, a good training, you know, this movie, the one thing it maybe should have had being an 80s movie is it didn't really have a training montage. We had a bunch of training. But
I think they essentially decided, I think the whole idea was, hey, what if we took the montage and we just made
it just, yeah, we that? Just, yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. Because that was a big part of it. But of course you needed to know the philosophy behind and why Chun was doing it. So again, it does try to probably jam too much into this, into one movie. And I think that's why we didn't have a opportunity to really build up the bad guy, because so much had to be devoted to this origin story.
I almost wonder if like the whole, Statue of Liberty thing came together like late in the game. It almost seems like, I don't know, they were trying to make it work scheduling wise and then they could do it. And they had almost had to kind of fit it into the script and then everything else got kind of rushed or, you know, delayed. Cause I'm not to say it feels out of place, but like just thinking about the timing of, you know, the construction work going on and that opening up as a possibility of somewhere that they could set the film and shoot it there. Like, was that something that came together real late? And then they just kind of shoved it into the script as a really cool scene.
That would be, I think there is another commentary track on the more recent Blu-ray release. And I feel like that one had people who were actually on the film, where the first one I saw was more like film historians and whatnot. So I'd be interested to probably rewatch with that commentary track to see if maybe, yeah, they mentioned something about that. I think a big part of it was Dick Clark was actually one of the executive producers, and it was kind of, he must have known people in New York and been a big enough name that he was the one I think was responsible for
brokered that
making
deal.
That happen.
Yeah.
Because again, he had the juice to make, you know, he's freaking Mr. Times Square every year. So, you know, he had to know some people there. So yeah. Again, 80s magic for me. I will always look fondly upon this movie. So much so that I named my dog after Remo Williams. So, you know, it really holds a special place in my heart. And I'm glad we finally got to talk about it. I'm glad you two had to sit through all 2 hours of it so we could do so.
I think the fact that I've been hearing you scream at Remo for like the last 2 years.
I haven't had to do that much lately. Remo, he's a good boy.
I know, but we do these episode 7 or whatever. You're like,
yeah.
Fucking Remo, fucking yeah. idiot.
Poor Miss Elizabeth.
He's definitely maturing. I mean, there's still some things he does that just, but yeah, he's to the point now where it's like 8 o'clock at night. He's done.
I've been doing the breathing exercises with him.
Maybe. Yeah. He's 8 o'clock. He's done. He's out of my hair and I can actually function and just sit and relax and watch TV and not have to worry about him getting into. Yeah. There was that one we did and he just shredded up a whole piece of cardboard and it was all over my living room floor when we were done. It was great. Great fun having a puppy in the house. So yeah. All right, well, there you have it, everyone. Remo Williams, another episode completed. I mentioned it earlier. I'll mention it again. Our social media, if you want to hit us up with suggestions for what to talk about here on the podcast, or if you just want to tell us that we suck or that we're great, you could do that. Or what you want us to cover on the website, you can hit us up at Bulletproof Pod on Twitter, at Bulletproof Action on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads. Bulletproofaction.com, of course, the official website of the Bulletproof Podcast. I'm going to be paying tribute to another Wilford Brimley movie, 10 to Midnight.
Wow, perfect.
Maybe he'll stand up in that one.
He does stand up in that one.
Hell yeah, he does.
And And penises
standing up in that one too.
Well, maybe. They're definitely flopping around. Mm-hmm. Pedro has the biggest one you've ever seen. I could tell you that right now. So yeah, we'll be, and we covered that on the podcast
earlier. We did
this year. So that was fun. I'm gonna go back to it. You know, you can never go to the cannon wheel too often in my world. We'll also be celebrating Jean-Claude Van Damme's birthday. So look for that with something we have not done in a while. Teaser. Beautiful. And so check that out. That's October the 18th. Happy birthday, Jean-Claude Van Damme. And of course, Ryan Campbell, you're always covering some kind of series. And the current one is Loki.
That's right. We just had Ahsoka wrap up, which was fantastic. You can check out the entire series there, recap-wise. But yeah, we're only just getting started on Loki. They actually didn't even do the multi-episode premiere thing they usually do, which cuts it down. It was just one episode, so we're well into that role. And got some other movies coming up here in the fall, so it should be good.
Also recently wrapping up The Continental. You can check out that. Ryan covered episode one. I kind of did an overview of all three parts. And I'll tell you what, because of that, like, I've had 70s music in my rotation ever since that.
There were some good needle drops in that show.
There was definitely that had a solid soundtrack, if nothing else. But I enjoyed that as well. You can check out our thoughts on that. Chad, do you have anything coming up you want to tease or just say you're going to do and never actually do?
Most of my teasing is done in a...
in a fingerboard kind of way?
No, I'm going to, it's Halloween season for me, so... I'm going to be probably putting out some more scary good action films, maybe a list or two. We'll see of some of my favorite scary horror action films. But yeah, and then of course that Jet Li movie, I've still got that in my queue. so stay tuned for that.
You know, I was thinking of maybe doing something for the Blob remake.
Okay.
That's what I was thinking for Halloween time. But
think so?
Speaking of Halloween time, that's our next podcast is going to be our famous Halloween themed podcast. And the Toy Man will be back, which is scary. But we're going to be talking Maniac Cop Chad Cruz.
That's very exciting. That's going to be a fun one, I think.
So that is what you can plan to hear next time here on the Bulletproof Podcast. But for now, I want to thank you all for checking out this one. Thank you for listening. And as always, stay tuned for more of the Bulletproof Podcast.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.